Janeway, Fox, Spear, Locke's acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hot. Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher Batliff, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series. We're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series. Well, hello, it's Thursday, August 11th, 2022. It is 7:30 p.m. Eastern Coast time, which means we are live. You can call 646-82433. And join us on the podcast. We would love to hear from you. And what are we going to be talking about? We're going to be talking about Strange New Worlds Season 1. We were going to talk about that last week, but we decided to pay homage to the late, great Nichelle Nichols. So we bumped that show to this week. So if you'd like to share your thoughts on Strange New Worlds, give us a call, 646-668-2433, and we'll get you on the air. But wait. There's more. We have a lot more. We have some Star Trek Picard Season 3 news, and Worf gets a new Klingon weapon. Dun, 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 dun. I'm kind of psyched about that. And will we see the Enterprise F or maybe the USS Titan show up? I don't know. You'll have to hang out and find out. We also have our Star Trek birthdays. We have our fan shout-outs and convention. Calendar. So we've got a lot to talk about tonight. I'm going to host Uncle Jim. And before we get started, I'd like to give an introduction to my awesome Trexperts. And we'll start off with Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas. How are you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. It's only about 99, but humidity's up again. We're still caught in monsoons. And you never know. It might rain. It might not rain.
Well, it's pouring rain here, which is why it's so hot and humid, and hopefully that rolls out in time for the big conventions. We'll see. Speaking of big conventions,
well,
we have
like
our very own
pouring rain in the middle of the valley.
Well, it's weird because it rains and you go across town and it's bone dry. It's like
still the same here.
We'd also like to say hello and welcome to the show to our very own Paul, the toy guy. How you doing, Paul?
My identity is morphing. I love it. I love it, sir. How are you?
I'm not too bad. And yourself?
I am well. I had a very strange afternoon. More talking and more people than I've seen in 2.5 years.
Well, it's Friday's Eve, and we're Trek talking, so what could be better?
It's the best, man. Looking forward to it a lot.
So it'll be fun. And also hailing from Portland, we have our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
Oh, man, I am doing good. I'm kind of like Paul. I'm sort of done with my week here. So I do like having this Trek Talking thing on Friday's Eve. Thank goodness it is Trek Talking Thursday, y'all.
It is a good day. It really is. And, of course, David the Donut Guy is ill and will not be with us tonight. So we don't have our Portland trifecta. We only have the dynamic duo with us. So that's okay. So anyways, guys, if you go to our Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond, you have to spell that all out. I tried changing the page, but when I did that, we lost everybody. And so we're just going to leave it the way it is. You can find us. Anyways, if you go there, you'll see the Live Long and Prosper right at the top of the page, the first post pinned there. And just drop us a little line and tell us where you're listening from. And every week, yours truly, Uncle Jim, picks 15, 20 lucky listeners. If you see a heart next to your name from yours truly, that means that your name will be given special shout out on our show. And for that, we're going to turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, tonight we're going to send our very first shout out to Manjeet Evanson from England. We always appreciate the support we get from our friends across the pond. And Manjeet, thank you so much for listening to us and for supporting both our Facebook page and for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate it. We're also saying hello this week to top fan Heather Grace from Young in New South Wales, Australia. G'day, y'all, she says. And I say g'day to you, Heather. Top fan means that Heather interacts with us a ton on our Facebook page, and we really appreciate fans, especially fans like that, Heather. So thank you so much for being so engaging and for supporting the podcast in the ways that you do. We're also saying hello this week to Piela Salonen from Finland. They say live long and prosper and send us a little Finnish flag. So Piela, thank you so much for supporting us all the way from up in Scandinavia. Esmond Delaney, we would like to say hello to you this week. Australian in Western Australia. I have followed Star Trek in all its forms since TOS. I cannot do the Vulcan salute. No matter how hard I try, I have friends like you as well, Esmond. To all my family who aren't Trekkies, they can't do it. It's a real pain in my seventh planet. Ha ha ha. And LOL symbol. So Esmond, you know what? We still accept you as part of the Star Trek family, despite the fact that you cannot live long and prosper easily. So thank you for supporting our podcast. Charles, who would you like to say hello to this week?
Okay. Let's start off with Barry J. Helveson from West Tennessee. Jim Good from Pennsylvania. Raymond Scorse from Wollongong, Australia. And Eric DeBlom from Florida, up near Jacksonville. And Paul, who's on your list?
Oh, all kinds of folks from all over our magical planet, Charles. You're not even believe it. We are covering various hemispheres tonight. We've got folks everywhere. First of all, a huge kapla, and thank you for listening to Rafael Dominguez in glorious Mexico City. Absolutely one of the great cities on the planet. If you've never been there, go. It's phenomenal. Also, thank you so much and felicitations to Alberto Perez in Rincon, Puerto Rico, and Alberto is sharing the live long and prosper sign right back at you, my friend. Live long and prosper indeed. As well, flashing a live long and prosper symbol, we've got on the other side of the planet in Germany, Patrick Schilling is an ardent fan and a supporter of the Facebook page and the show. Thank you so much for listening. And not too far away from Patrick in wonderful Portugal. Oh, Portugal, Andrea Fernandez. A friend of mine was just visiting Portugal and was torturing me with all of these amazing vacation pictures on Facebook. And Andrea, you live in a stunning, fabulous place. Absolutely gorgeous there. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful stuff. I'd like to also extend a great, great Trek Talk and hello to Stephen Farrell in Pattaya, Thailand. Thank you so much for listening to us and for reaching out and contacting us. In the beautiful country of Belgium, On Nick is also a Trek Talking aficionado and wanted to say hello. In Brazil, oh, sweet, magnificent Brazil, Andre Silva is also letting us know that they are keeping the Star Trek enthusiasm alive and well in that fantastic country. And finally for me, in Hungary, a land of incredible history and absolutely amazing, beautiful beauty. Zoltán Herrera is also reaching out to say hello. Thank all of you for listening to our podcast, for checking out the Facebook page, for sharing your thoughts, and mostly proving to us, as happens every week, that Star Trek fandom is a global uniting force, a positive thing that helps unite us all together. So it's a wonderful thing to see. But we're not done yet, because I think we've got even more fans who have wanted to reach out. Jim, am I correct? Do you have more names there on your list?
I've got a few more that we want to say thank you to. The first one we want to say is to Gary Yeager from Salina, Kansas. No relation to me whatsoever, though. Maybe somewhere down the chain there's a connection there. I'm not sure. But kapla to Gary Yeager listening to us in Kansas. We also want to say live long and prosper to top fan Scott James Weston, who's listening to us in Texas in the U.S. of A. Thank you so much, Scott. And over in Germany, we have Michael Schultz. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And last but not least on my list is Michael Cooper, who's listening to us in Missouri. So that wraps up our fan shout-outs, guys. Like I said, if you'd like to be mentioned on a fan shout-out, please head over to our Facebook page at Trek Talking and Beyond and just drop us a little note. Let us know where you're listening from. Look for a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim. So we're going to take our very first commercial break, and this is a very important one. So quick, run to the microwave, get your pizza bites, get your tacos, go to the bathroom, and come right back. Don't touch that dial, because we've got a lot more to talk about.
Hi there, this is Eric from Trek Talking. Do you own a business, produce a product, or are planning an event that would appeal to Star Trek fans? Would you like to harness the power of this podcast to get your message out to the world? We here at Trek Talking are a show made by fans for fans, and we would love to help you share your love of Star Trek on the air, live every Monday and Thursday night at 7:30 Eastern. Contact us through Facebook Messenger at facebook.com/trektalkingandbeyond, or email us using the contact link on our website at podpage.com/trek-talking. We can't wait to hear from you. Engage.
Don't miss Fandom Fest New York, featuring special guests, vendors, artists, esports, tabletop games, and so much more. Fandom Fest, a unique con experience at Proctor's, August 12th through 14th.
Have you always wanted to tour the Enterprise? Would you like to meet Jim and Eric from Trek Talking in a live setting? Then join us August 19th through the 21st in Ticonderoga, New York for Trek Conderoga 2022. Star Trek The Next Generation stars Gates McFadden, John DeLancey, and Brent Spiner will be headlining the event. Leading tours of the painstakingly recreated USS Enterprise TOS sets, participating in bridge chats, and much more. Trek Conderoga 2022 is your chance to meet some of your favorite Next Generation actors in a setting with small crowd sizes and easy accessibility to the stars. Don't forget to swing by the Trek Talking table to see Uncle Jim and Eric. We'd love to meet you. Engage.
And we're back, guys. I will be appearing at Fandom Fest at Proctor's Theater in Schenectady, New York, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we had Mike on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and it's going to be a lot of fun. This is our first show, and I'm really looking forward to see, you know, how it goes together. And perhaps next year we'll do a live broadcast from that show. Trek Conderoga, which is next weekend, Eric and I are going to be there as well. We'll be in the gymnasium. We'll have our Trek Talking table set up. We're going to be doing a couple of panels at that convention. I'll be doing one on Klingons, and Eric is going to be doing one. What are you going to be doing yours on, Eric?
I'm going to be doing mine on Star Trek Admirals. It should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, are there some evil ones on that list?
Well, and that is the question we are going to be asking. Why are so many Star Trek Admirals evil? Does absolute power corrupt absolutely? A very interesting philosophical question. I hope you will join us at Trek Conderoga, especially for my panel, because we're going to get a little bit philosophical here. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, and we're going to do our panels like a live podcast. We can't do a podcast from there because there's absolutely no Wi-Fi up there in the mountains. So we're going to do our panels like a podcast, and we're going to encourage you guys to be part of it and join the conversation with us as I talk about Klingons and Eric talks about Admirals. So if you guys are in the area and you haven't seen the set tour, please stop by. We're going to have Trek Talking t-shirts and coffee mugs at our table. And you don't want to miss out on that. It'll be a lot of fun. So anyways, our phone number here is 646-668-2433. Let your fingers do the walking and give us a call. We'll get you on the air. We're going to be talking about Strange New Worlds shortly. But first, we have to do our Star Trek birthdays. And we do have a caller on the line. If I can get this thing to work. Let me see. Sometimes it's very touchy. Good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talking. What's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
They're running.
Can you hear me?
Just barely, man. Speak up.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello?
A lot of background noise, but not a lot of audio.
Okay.
Well, maybe we keep him on the line, Jim, and maybe we can try again in a little bit.
Yep, I'm going to keep you on the line, caller. I tried to answer the phone, and I heard a lot of background noise. I could barely hear, so I'm going to keep you on the line, and so don't go away. When we do our birthdays, I'll come back to you, and hopefully things will clear up. So this is the part of the show where we do our Star Trek birthdays, which means we have to hear from Worf.
That was not a Klingon song.
All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we remember all the members of our Star Trek family who celebrate birthdays this week, and we always start off with, unfortunately, those members who are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we have several members of our Star Trek community lives we'd like to remember and celebrate who would have had birthdays this week. So our first remembrance this week goes out to actor David Bryan, who, of course, played the historian John Gill in TOS's episode Patterns of Force. Besides his stint on Star Trek, Bryan was also a guest in many other television series, including The Untouchables, I Dream of Jeannie, Rawhide, Gunsmoke, and Mission Impossible. Those are some big names. So David Bryan crossing over into Star Trek, thank you so much, David, for your contributions, and happy birthday to him. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Steve Inhut, who played Fleet Captain Garth of Izar in the TOS episode Whom Gods Destroy. What a great, great character.
Now, he wasn't an admiral, but would he qualify as sort of for your panel man as being sort of like corrupt Starfleet guys who kind of go
yeah, maybe.
With the power? I think he maybe could make an appearance.
Fleet captain is right up there. Charles might know more about where fleet captain falls versus fleet admiral versus captain, blah, 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 blah. But it sounds to me like he's in charge of a lot of ships, so I would absolutely agree there, Paul.
Because a lot of times the most egregious ones didn't quite make admiral. They're just captains who got power mad, right? Like Omega yeah. Glory, right?
Yes, absolutely. And Steven Inhut, what a great, great role. An actor originally born in Czechoslovakia, but immigrated to Canada with his family after his country was invaded by Nazi Germany. So he is an escapee, y'all, and of course appeared in many, many other things. It feels like I'm playing the same thing over and over again. Bonanza, Gunsmoke, Mission Impossible. Lots and lots of television crossovers there. So happy birthday, Steve Inhut. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Lillian Chalvin, who played Vedic Yassim in DS9's Rocks and Shoals. I'll say one of the more minor Vedics, but that's not a knock. That's just, in terms of screen time and stuff. Chalvin was actually a native of Paris, and not only was she an actor, but she was also a writer and director, directed several stage productions, including Last Summer at Bluefish Cove, The Happy Time, and Laughter and Love. Total of 34 directing credits, so that is nothing to scoff at, you guys. So Lillian Chalvin would have had a birthday this week. We're also saying happy birthday to Ron Gans, who was, of course, the voice of Armus, the slime monster in TNG's Skin of Evil. What a rotten way for Tasha Yar to have to go down. But Ron Gantz has a fantastic voice, and he's actually a voice actor who has several credits. He was also in the second season episode Shades of Grey. He's also known as voicing Eeyore in Welcome to Pooh Corner. And also, he was on Dumbo's Circus on the Disney Channel. But most importantly, in terms of my connections, he was also the voice of Dragstrip in the 1980s animated series Transformers. Dragstrip, of course, being the right arm of Menasor, the first of all the combiners. So Ron Gans, great voice. You guys,
Eric,
don't have any connections.
It was nice,
Eric, you gotta
to
hold
see
up,
that
man.
Farmers has come back.
Yeah, totally.
Are you telling me that the voice of Armus is also the voice of Eeyore on Winnie the Pooh? Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm telling you that he's at least one Winnie the Pooh, or at least one Eeyore.
Wow, my mind is now blown. I am blown.
It's more than
easy. Welcome to Pooh Corner. He was Eeyore.
Wow.
Yep. So if you like that puppet series.
Innocence forever corrupted.
I know. But you can imagine it, right? Like, you can hear his voice in your mind's eye.
Oh, totally. You can hear him talking in a deep voice.
That's
not going to kill everyone.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ron Gans, guys, would have had a birthday this week. Thank you so much for your contributions to both the Star Trek world and all the other franchises you crossed over. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Jeff Corey, who, of course, played Plasus in TOS's episode The Cloud Minders. Now, this guy, over 200 film and television appearances that spanned 61 years. You know, he goes way back into the 1950s. He was actually in the 1951 film Superman and the Mole Men, one of the very, very first, like, actual Superman movies that existed way back in the day. But interestingly enough, he's actually blacklisted also in 1951 for refusing to name names as part of the whole communist hunt that was going on in the country at that time. So this guy, classy dude, lots and lots of
tons of westerns, man. Tons of westerns.
Guys, just go to his IMDb. It's like, it's so
Butch Cassidy, True Grit. He was in Beneath the Planet of the Apes. What a guy. And and such character, like you mentioned too, and ethics.
And exactly. The fact that he was involved in that whole hunt for communists is just a very interesting part of his career. So happy birthday, Jeff Corey. We do miss you very much. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Laurel Goodwin, who was one of our many excellent Yeoman. This was Yeoman Jam Colt. I love Yeoman Colt. Back from the original episode, The Cage. Laurel Goodwin was an actress, not in a ton of stuff, but her acting break did come back in the 1962 Elvis Presley movie, Girls, Girls, Girls. And she only was on the acting scene for about 10 years or so. She actually abandoned acting in 1971. And it wasn't until much, much later in 2005 that she actually attended her first Trek convention. So thank you, Laurel, for eventually kind of reintegrating yourself with the Star Trek family, because I do think Yeoman Colt is a memorable character that, Star Trek fans, I'm sure, were looking to meet at conventions whenever possible. So you would have had a birthday this week. Thank you so much for your Star Trek contribution as well. We had this week to Charles Cooper. And now Charles Cooper, Jim, I'm honestly surprised you let me have this one, because he played not one, but two. What, Jim? Two what?
He was the Klingon of all Klingons, this guy.
He played two Klingons. Oh my gosh! He played two Klingons.
Great Klingons.
And the thing is, he played two great Klingons, not only from the TNG era, but he was also crossing over to the TOS era in Jim's favorite movie. So, Charles Cooper, of course, was known as General Cord in Star Trek V, and also became later known as Kempek, who is just an awesome character in TNG's episode Sins of the Father. and Reunion. Those come those come from the third and fourth season, so he spans over at least two seasons of TNG.
Classic Klingon. Classic
Klingon, and he looks so good in the Klingon makeup. Like, I don't know, this guy, I think he did such a great job in both these roles. But what's interesting is he has almost no television or film acting credits. All of his other acting credits come in the world of the stage. So Charles Cooper just did a great job in that makeup and two great characters playing General Kord and Kempek.
And I got to tell you, back in the 90s when I was running Star Trek conventions, I had the opportunity and I'd say, who do I want to meet? As you said, Star Trek V, I love Star Trek V. So I said, how about General Kord from Star Trek V? He's never done a convention. It would be his first. I reached out to him. He didn't even normally you go to the Screen Actors Guild. He didn't even have a Screen Actors Guild representation because he wasn't acting in movies and TV. So I ended up tracking down and calling him at home and saying, hey, you know, I'm doing a Star Trek convention and, you know, you play General Kord in Star Trek V and I'd love to have you at my convention. And he couldn't believe that people would want to come and see him when he was under all this makeup and he couldn't understand it. And so he shows up at the convention, brings his whole family with him. And, he had so much fun signing autographs and talking with fans, and he was totally beside himself at how many people actually wanted to come and see him when he was in all that makeup. He was a great guy and a great guest at the convention. So, yeah, I just had to share that story with you guys. He was really awesome.
That's awesome, Jim. That's so totally awesome. Sounds like an awesome guy. I wish I would have been able to meet him. So happy birthday, Charles Cooper. And our very last remembrance goes out to a woman who is sometimes called the mother of Star Trek. Her birthday would have been last Saturday on August 6th. And we are, of course, talking about someone who, if you're in the know about Star Trek, you understand the connections. But if you're kind of new to Star Trek, you may not even know that there's a connection. Lucille Ball, the mother of Star Trek, would have had a birthday this week. And the thing is that I don't know if you all know this or not, but Desilu Studios was actually the very first kind of official owner of the Star Trek property. They bought Gene Roddenberry's Star Trek Is pitch in April of 1964. And of course, Lucille Ball, as the owner of the company, became in effect the very first individual legal and commercial owner of what was yet to become the Star Trek franchise. This meant that, you know, Gene Roddenberry, you know, once he signed that contract, he sort of lost all rights and title to his creation, except for being credited by, you know, created by, credited as being created by in the end. And so even right from the beginning, I think we all know the Desilu kind of like saved Star Trek stories, but even right from the beginning, way back in 1964, there was involvement from her studio. And of course, you know, co-owned by Desi Arnaz, but a lot of input from both of them, depending on which biographies you read and which movies you see. Effectively, Lucille Ball is a essential component of our Star Trek universe. And I just love that fact, knowing that I had no clue when I was a kid that the 16mm TOS episodes that I was watching at the public library had any connection with the black and white episodes of I Love Lucy that I was watching in reruns at like 4:30 in the afternoon. So that to me is just a really special connection. I love it. I feel like she's a person who I would have loved to have met. Just her energy and everything that comes out in the screen is amazing to me. So I don't know. Do you guys want to say anything else about Lucille Ball here?
I can actually remember Lucille Ball probably close the same time as watching Star Trek is watching her on TV. Because her series was heavily run in reruns also.
It was so
I Love Lucy. That was so common reruns when I was growing up as a kid. And just the interactions that the two of them had on the show and all the things going on.
Jesse Arnaz, yep.
I had respect for her before we even found out she was the one that got Star Trek going.
I mean, one of the classic comedians of all time. I mean, without fail. I mean, from that era, you know, I know a lot of our listeners are probably younger, right, from the more digital age, did not grow up with, like, reruns on, like, you know, regular TV. But if you've never watched these old comedians, right, like the Lucille Ball era, throw it down on, like, Amazon Prime or wherever you can rent them at and just watch some of these. The comedy... for me, there's always going to be two. There's Lucille Ball and Carol Burnett. And probably were never two funnier, you know, classic comedians that you will ever
both
find on
comedians.
This planet. Both just great. I mean, one facial expression just killed it. They're geniuses.
Paul, I'll add one more woman to your list. Gracie Allen.
Yeah, I think she's absolutely
that
worthy as well. Not as well known, right? She's more from the radio era, right?
Man. She was such a straight man, but the line she threw out, and you just couldn't believe she would say that. Incredible actress.
Yeah, the comedians are great, man. So, but we all as fans owe Lucille Ball a great debt because she was willing to take a bet and said, you know what, all you guys, I want to put my money on this thing, and guess what, I've got the money, and she's got the influence, and she had Ricky's ear, so you know Desi's ear. She carried a lot of influence, and there you know because she believed in Gene's idea. Of a wagon train to the stars. If not for her belief and open-mindedness, we might not be where we are today. So I think Eric's really, it's great that you're spending some time to really acknowledge the influence she had not just Star Trek, but science fiction in general.
I'll put one image in all your faces and you'll all smile. Lucille Ball in the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, what's really kind of funny about this whole thing, I mean, I think she is revered for a reason, because, honestly, here we are 55-plus years later. We're still talking about it. But in the very, very beginning, if you can believe it, she actually kind of misunderstood the whole premise for the show when she bought the rights to it. She was actually originally under the impression that she had bought a show that dealt with Hollywood stars traveling the South Seas for the USO. Visiting, like, fighting troops in the Pacific. So she didn't know when they first bought the rights to the show that it was, quote, you know, science fiction, I guess. That wasn't part of the definition. Because the way that it was described to her was in this other context. And that just goes to show to me that science fiction, I think the best science fiction always talks, I'm going to go on a tiny tangent, but it won't last long. The best science fiction always talks about today, right? And it always brings in the elements of what's going on today, and it processes those, and it asks questions about those, and all that kind of stuff. And here Lucille Ball was, you know, back in the mid-60s, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the world in the mid-60s. And, you know, she buys this thing, and it doesn't really matter whether it's science fiction or not, it's covering the topics of today. And she recognizes that and gloms onto it and, of course, propels us into the future. Thank you, Lucille. We seriously owe you a big, big debt because podcasts like this might not actually exist without your contributions. So happy birthday to Lucille Ball. And that, you guys, is the very last of our remembrances this week. We spent a little time on that, but I think she warrants it. So, Charles, why don't we start the party for the folks who are still with us?
Yay. Let's start off with Clayton Rohner, who played Admiral Mark Jamieson, TNG's Too Short a Season. There's another one for your list, Eric. And
yeah,
I thought it interesting.
Sure.
He got a chance. The first time he ever acted was in a movie. But I love the first TV show he got in. He got in a small part in a TV show called T.J. Hooker. I'm
Ooh.
Not sure how we tie that into Star Trek, but
oh, very easily.
Do it.
Very easily.
Very easily.
And then we got one of our favorite young reporters from DS9. Our own Jake Sisko, played by Sirach Lofton. I thought interesting, even though we're used to seeing him on Seventh Rule, he does a little bit of acting. But I love the fact that the first movie he ever popped in was Beethoven.
It's a cute movie. Super cute movie.
Yeah. John Glover played Verdad in DS9's Invasive Procedures. Now, I looked up his IMDb, and I thought this is an interesting quote. Frequently plays sinister villains, a graveled, throaty voice. Who also got to play the Riddler on Batman, the animated series.
Mm-hmm.
General Veers, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, he's been in a few different things. Like, he's got a face and a voice that you would recognize.
Last Crusade.
He was in Last Crusade. He was in, like, the Shazam movie, which my daughter absolutely loved. he's been
cool, there. Man. Cool. What a long list of stuff that guy's got.
A lot of list in it, but I thought those quotes about him being that a sinister villain was fun. Louise Sorrell played Raina Kempek in TOS's Requiem of Methuselah. Happy 82nd birthday, Louise. Mike Okuda.
Yeah!
Yeah!
Wow!
Woo! The man.
Five, Star Trek 6, TNG, DS9, Voyager. He ran in between art supervisor and graphic consultant.
Living
all
legend.
All those series and movies.
Living yeah. legend Mike Okuda. Probably done more to influence the look of Star Trek and the fealty to science than any other person involved with the franchise, full stop.
Yeah, and that technical manual that he helped develop, like, back in the day, that literally just sent my mind into a whole other realm when it came to Star Trek, and it gave me a real connection to science. Like, this, if you haven't seen the Next Generation technical manual, it's amazing, you guys, because it does things like explains how warp drive works and explains how a transporter works. And we're not talking about, like, They did their best. Michael Okuda at the helm did their best to actually make it as real as possible, right? We all know that right now we can't transport matter, although maybe we can transport photons of light. Look that up. But we know we can't transport matter quite yet. So Michael Okuda explained to us in these technical manuals how it might be possible. And to me, that just opened my mind to science fiction and really made me, if I wasn't already in love with Jean-Luc, I was in love with the technical manual.
And he created the Okudagram, which was used on Deep Space Nine, Voyager, TNG, all through right up until the new shows. Which,
yep.
If you guys don't know what an Okudagram is, that's the backlit graphics that you see on every single starship. They're called the Okudagrams, and he created them for TNG.
This guy is a titan as far as I'm concerned. If there was a guy I wanted to meet, Mike Okuda would be right up there.
He's the man.
All right. Then I've got David Hugh Kelly, who played Sojus in Star Trek Insurrection. And actually, looking at the IMDb, I will kind of comment later, but one of his first real acting roles was in soap operas, including Ryan's Hope.
Oh my God, my mom used to watch that.
No, I'll reference that again soon. Evan Orgoia played Elnar in Star Trek Picard. Now, he doesn't have a whole lot of credits to him yet, but we might decide to change our minds and want to have to go watch Fantasy Island, the movie, as that was one of his first roles. And finally on my list, one of my favorite characters, Catherine Hicks, played Dr. Jillian Taylor in Star Trek IV.
Woohoo!
And guess where she spent a bunch of her early time in TV? Also Ryan's Hope. Also appeared in Bad News Bears, the TV series.
I have to tell you, when Star Trek IV came out, I remembered her in that movie from Ryan's Hope, which my mom used to watch religiously.
I remember her from Seventh Heaven.
Oh, well, later on, yeah, for sure. Another great series.
But I wonder if Catherine and Daniel worked together at all.
Ooh, maybe.
Plus, she did work with Stephen Collins, who played Decker in Star Trek The Motion Picture on Seventh Heaven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yep.
So
that guy.
There's a Star Trek connection.
Also where I know him from. Yep, later.
In fact, I believe she's shown up to at least one Star Trek Las Vegas. So she has popped into conventions occasionally. So we'll move on to say, Paul, who's on your list?
All kinds of folks out there, Charles, who I hope are, wherever they may be on this planet or any other planet, really tearing it up this week and celebrating their birthdays. First of all, felicitations and very happy birthday to actor Brett Gray. You go, who's Brett Gray? Well, you don't see Brett Gray that often because Brett Gray is the actor who voices Dahl, the main character on Star Trek Prodigy. And if you've not gotten into Prodigy yet, I got to, again, shameless plug, fantastic stuff. It does not get, I think, the amount of attention that it could. It is just great, really, really great. But Brett puts a lot of real heart and real talent into making him a likable, reluctant protagonist who's sort of coming to terms with the responsibilities of adulthood and command. Great performance. I think you're going to be seeing a lot of Brett Gray, and I think more and more people are going to be discovering what a great show Prodigy is. But highly recommended checking it out if you haven't before, and Brett's absolutely the real deal. Really super, super great. So happy birthday, dude. And this next actor I really, really like. I think he was one of the most, for me, one of the bright spots of this last season of Picard, okay, is actor John Briones, okay? When we're in the totalitarian future Earth where everything has gone wrong and Picard is kind of a horrible draconian, you know, zealot, and you have President Hansen, a.k.a. Seven of Nine, right? John Briones was her husband, the kind of, you know, mustachioed, fastidious Confederation magistrates. You know, what is going on with you, dear? It seems like you're not yourself today. He was hilarious. You know, always looking, he's just very suspicious. You knew he was going to be a bad guy who people were going to, you know, get found out by. But he was just great, tremendous. You can tell, you can always tell the actors who've got a lot of theater, and John Briones definitely does. So I'd love to revisit that evil totalitarian universe. We only got a couple episodes of that.
And Friends on Picard, I was hoping for more. I would have loved to have gone back.
His father, who plays Soji.
I was wondering how they were related, yeah.
No way, they're related, huh? That's great.
Yep.
Keeping it in the family. Wow.
There's no
nepotism. Well, I'm a fan of this guy. He's really great, really talented. Awesome. And coming up next also, we've got several other birthdays still. I want to make sure we squeeze in here because I've got to keep an eye on the clock. Bill Lithgow, Dr. Pran Tainer in Next Gen episode Inheritance. Haven't seen that one in a while. So happy birthday to you, Bill. Some Deep Space Nine cast members coming up here. Ray Butanica, who played Dios in Deep Space Nine episode By Inferno's Light. And here's somebody who spent a lot of time in the Star Trek universe here, working all kinds of different roles. Leyland Orser played Guy in Deep Space Nine's Sanctuary and Lovok in the Dias cast. Djarin on Voyager's episode Revulsion. And on Enterprise, Loomis in Carpenter Street. So, gosh, you got Deep Space Nine, you got Voyager, and you got Enterprise on your CV there, Leyland. You are a extremely prolific appearer in the Star Trek universe. So kudos to you. That's a lot of appearances, a lot of different roles in the Federation there across numerous quadrants. So congratulations and happy birthday. Happy birthday also to Richard Cassino, played Dr. Garen in Next Gen's famous episode Deja Q. Don Most played Dr. Caden in Voyager's Workforce, Parts 1 and 2. And this next actor, gosh, kind of obscure. I feel like I've heard of him somewhere. Put my finger on it, but maybe
something
can help me out.
Something that starts with a T-H-O-R.
Yeah, maybe. Does anyone know Chris Hemsworth? Oh, yeah, Chris Hemsworth. I know. He's that kind of sickly young man who doesn't seem like he gets outside much or probably not a guy you want to ask to help you move, right? Because he's just not very robust or, you know, he probably, you know, I think he played the before in Captain America, right? Isn't that it? Before the serum was injected to him, isn't that it? Right? I think
he was Darth Vader. Wasn't he Darth Vader?
He was a very thin man, young
so
man. I wish he would eat a sandwich, Chris, really, for the rest of us. Just do something. Maybe just a tad, but it's always fun to remember that galactic superstar of the cosmos that Thor's Chris Hemsworth is. One of his first big roles that really got our attention was when he played James Kirk's father, George, in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek 2009, Captain of the Kelvin, right? So a fantastic debut, really great. I mean, that movie, you know, I just think that it's a terrific piece of filmmaking. And one of the things that's great about it is how awesome those opening scenes are. They grab you by the, get your attention and grab you and hook you into the story right out of the way. And a lot of that is due to the gravitas that Chris Hemsworth brought to that. So it's super cool that you are part of the Star Trek universe, Chris. And there's been a lot of talk for some time that maybe,
come back.
I know there's a script that's floating around out
come
there.
Back.
They talked about revisiting that and doing a little time travel where maybe father and son would be reunited together for an adventure.
That'd be so sweet.
Right? Where, like, Jim Kirk would have to go back and spend some time with George Kirk.
Dude,
maybe hide his identity.
In my mind's eye, I have this perfect, like, thing where the Kelvin universe ties back into the Prime universe and it all involves Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth, and it's just all perfect. I love that idea.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's we spend a lot of time focusing on the Paramount Plus era these days, but some good stuff happened in those Kelvin use films, right? I mean, it's just, and a lot of people sometimes like to harp on them, but there's, you know, way more good than not in there.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
I think there's a lot of stuff in there that, let's not squander those opportunities, but the idea of a young adult Kirk going back to visit his father and have to team up anonymously, I'd love to get my mitts on that script and read it, because to me that sounds like classic Star Trek, right? It's like, that's like, you know, one from the animated yesteryear.
Oh.
When Spock has to go back to,
yeah.
You know, to me, it's the same kind of dynamic, right?
Yep.
Where it's super focused on character and dealing with your past and to reconcile your future. I would love to get my hands on that script and read it. So Chris Hemsworth, please consider returning to the Star Trek universe. Not that you haven't made enough money off of Thor this year.
That movie was awesome too.
I think it's one of the most hilarious times I've had in a theater this year. Just hilarious. So I'm a big fan of Mr. Hemsworth. He's done great nautical movies. He's done race car movies. He's pretty much just general showing up for work badass. Just great guy. So happy birthday, sir. I hope we see you back in Starfleet uniform sooner as opposed to later. And Jim, I know you got some special ones on your list, so I'm going to pass things over to you, brother.
I've got some good ones. The first we want to start off with, it's Hemmer time. That's right. Bruce Horrock, who played Chief Engineer Hemmer in Strange New Worlds, who unfortunately got hammered a bit too soon. We love him. We miss him. But hopefully he's making room for somebody else to show up as chief engineer. Maybe not in season two.
Somebody with perhaps a Scottish accent?
It could be. We'll have to wait and see. But happy birthday to Bruce Horrock. We also want to say happy birthday to Valerie Wildman, who played Nelva in Boys episode Message in a Bottle. That was a great episode. She was one of the Romulans on the ship. One of my favorites, and I'm going to say it. I say it every time. When she kicked Worka in the face and he was standing behind her, just blows my mind every single time I see it. I just think that Michelle Yeoh is awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And I hope they bring her back to Star Trek. She played Captain Philippa Giorgio, who is the captain of the USS Sinjao. But then after she died, she came back as Emperor Giorgio right up until season three, and she was incredible. So happy birthday to Michelle Yeoh. And, you know, I'm going to have to go watch her kick Lorca in the face again, because that was just all of her fighting scenes on Discovery were incredible. So happy birthday to Michelle Yeoh. The next one, we'd like to say happy birthday to Melissa George, who played Vina in the Discovery episode, If Memory Serves. But horror fans might know her from 30 Days of Night, where the vampires take over this Alaskan town that has 30 days of night. So happy birthday to Melissa George.
Great picture,
one,
dude.
That was great. That really was. Like it. Like it a lot. Peyton List, who played Nerissa in Picard season one. She was a bit creepy.
A bit.
Her brother,
honestly, Jim, I have to tell you that Peyton List right now is right up in that kind of like Kai Wen sort of like disgusting villain range for me, because she's so gross.
Yeah, she was a Federation officer. She was disguised as a Federation officer. And Seven of Nine did kill her. Fans are like, we didn't see her body. She's not dead. Well, Seven threw her off the top balcony of a board. She's dead.
She's done. She's done.
She's history. She was creepy, though. She deserved to die. She was just creepy weird. And speaking of creepy weird Romulans, we want to say happy birthday to Eric Bana, who played Nero in Star Trek 2009, which we just talked about with Chris Hemsworth. So we got two Star Trek 2009ers in our list. And I always save the Klingons for last. So first, we want to say happy birthday to Shannon Cochran, who had several roles. The first one, she played Kalita in TNG's Preemptive Strike and DS9's Defiant. She also played Senator Talara in Star Trek Nemesis. But the reason why I saved her for the last is because she played Lady Sirella, and Lady Sirella happened to be Martok's wife on Deep Space Nine, and she played in the episode where Cordially Invited. She's the one that had to indoctrinate Jadzia into the ways of the Klingons.
She had that really cool like headpiece that she wore, which to me was like, it like takes the Klingon forehead ridges and in a really artistic and cool way like makes a crown of that same aesthetic. As a guy who's an architect and a, you know, I appreciate good aesthetics. I love that thing that she wears on her head.
Yeah, it's a great episode, guys. DS9, you are cordially invited. Kapla to Lady Cirella. And the last one I have on my list, we like to say happy birthday and kapla to Sean Blackmore, who played Klingon Captain Curran in Star Trek Into Darkness. He's the one that had the helmet on. He takes off the helmet, and he's got the gold piercings in his head ridge. And yeah. I like to think that those gold piercings might be like a rank. We never really find out, and he's the only one we see without a helmet on.
Interesting.
But I'm thinking that those gold piercings, because he was the captain, were his rank. I don't know that for fact.
No, but I love that, Jim, and I love, you know, I've always loved the fact that when Discovery, of course, came out and they kind of reimagined the Klingons, they imagine them with different adornments and that sort of stuff. And we get some Klingons that have a lot of jewelry and, you know, nose rings and ridge rings and that kind of stuff. And I love tying that back into the Kelvin timeline movies and the rings that those Klingons wore in their ridges, because those, like, if you're going to have ridges as a biological element, you're going to adorn that shit, right? You're going to like put some rings in it because it's going to look totally awesome when you do it. And that is one of the things that I love about the Kelvin timeline movies. And it's one of the things that I love about the way that Discovery reimagined the Klingons as well.
Yeah. And you know, in my mind, it makes perfect sense that the gold rings tell you he's the captain.
Now, of course.
It hasn't been said anywhere. It's not in any technical manual, JJ, but it's just me saying what I think it meant, because why else would they show it if it didn't mean anything? So anyway,
most victorious battles, you know, something like that, right? Like,
yeah,
notches on the bedpost to being the most fierce combatant in the tribe.
Yep. Yeah, it's got to have something to do with it. But anyways, kapla. That wraps up our Star Trek birthdays, guys, and now it's time for... And Eric...
Yes, we have our convention calendar here, and the very first convention we are tracking is Ancient City Con. I love that name. September 16th through the 18th at the World Golf Village Renaissance St. Augustine Resort in beautiful St. Augustine, Florida. So go check out that con. We're also going to be checking out the Deep South Para Comic Con September 23rd through the 25th at the Daleville Cultural and Convention Center in Daleville, Alabama. And one of my personal favorite named conventions because, I have personal reasons related to Green Lantern Comics, Necronomicon, September 23rd through the 25th at the Embassy Suites by Hilton Tampa in Tampa, Florida. Jim, we have more conventions. What do you have to say about them?
Yes, we do. I'm going to try to fill in for David. Hopefully I can squeak by. So the first one we have is SpaCon, September 23rd through the 25th at Hot Springs Convention Center in Hot Springs, Arizona. It's interesting. I wonder if it's in a spa, if that's just a clever name. I don't know. If I'm in Hot Springs, I'll have to go check out SpaCon.
Jim, isn't AR Arkansas?
I don't think so.
Arizona's AZ.
Well, maybe it is.
I think Hot Springs is in Arkansas.
Could be. We also want to say we have Cap Clave. Yeah, I think it's Cap Clave. Did you guys say it's Cap Clave or Cap Clave?
Yes.
Could be either or.
I'm saying Cap Clave because that just sounds cool.
Yeah, it does sound cool. Is that like a Captain America thing maybe? September 30th.
Like a conclave, right? Like a gathering, like a conclave.
Yeah, like a conclave, yeah. At the Hilton Washington, D.C. Rockville Hotel and Executive Meeting Center in Rockville, Maryland. And last but definitely not least, we have Super Mega Fest Comic Con,
September
30th. Great convention if you guys have never been there, in Westford Regency Inn and Conference Center in Westford, Massachusetts. We used to go to that before COVID. I haven't been there in years, obviously, but it was always a good convention. It was always a lot of fun. So,
you know,
what's
so funny, Jim, is I was in that convention, or I mean, I've been to that convention probably back in like the late 90s, between 97 and 99 sometime. You are correct. Awesome convention.
It is fun.
And a great venue, actually.
Yes, absolutely. And Paul, what do you got for us?
Oh, my friend, I'm telling you what. As you get into the second week of October, we're transitioning into fall. The leaves are beginning to come down. It's autumn. It's a great time to rub elbows with your fellow fans and get out there no matter where you may be. If you are in Rochester, Minnesota, or nearby, you can go to the Mayo Civic Center, October 7th to 9th, for Nerdin' Out Con 2022. I love that name because it's saying it with pride. I'm nerding out. Let's go together and nerd out together. I think that's a great con name. So October 7th through 9th, Rochester, Minnesota. In Abilene, Texas, at the Abilene Public Library. So I'm thinking seating might not be so gigantic. I don't know how big the Abilene Public Library is, but you may want to get there and get in line early. October 8th for LibCon. LibCon, you sound like my kind of people, friend, so I might have to get in line there as well. Abilene, Texas, Abilene Public Library, October 8th for LibCon. And finally, in Dublin, California, where everyone's super glad that fall is finally coming. At the Holiday Inn Dublin at Pleasanton, October 8th through 9th, you can attend the Mystical Minds Fall Gathering 2022. Mystical Minds. It seems like it's going to encompass everything in the realm of fantasy and science fiction, including Star Trek. I think you should probably go there and check it out for yourself. Charles, what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, let's try October 14th through 16th. For Multiverse at the Westin Atlantic Premier North, Atlanta, Georgia. Deep South Con. Oh, I wonder if that's in the South. October 23rd to 23rd at the Embassy Suites by Hilton Huntsville Hotel and Spa, Huntsville, Alabama. I guess you are hanging the South. But if you don't want to be in the South, you can go to Mile High Con the same weekend, the 21st to 23rd in October, at Denver Marriott Tech Center in Denver, Colorado. Jim, I bet we'd love to have some news.
Yes, we would. We do have some news, but first, we have some very important messages, so don't touch that dial.
Trek Talking would like to invite you and your friends to ease your way back into the Star Trek event scene by joining us August 19th through the 21st at Trek Conderoga 2022, the biggest little Star Trek event in Ticonderoga, New York. Headliners Gates McFadden, John DeLancey, and Brent Spiner will be giving photo ops, autographs, and will be participating in celebrity guest talks. Trek Talking will also be in attendance as Uncle Jim and Eric chair discussion panels on Klingons and Starfleet Admirals. Tour the original series set tours, play some mini golf, or attend an award-winning Elvis tribute show. There is something for everyone at Trek Conderoga. We hope to see you there. Engage.
Don't miss Fandom Fest New York, featuring special guests, vendors, artists, esports, tabletop games, and so much more. Fandom Fest, a unique con experience at Proctor's, August 12th through 14th.
And we're back, and I got to say, Eric, hell of a job on the commercial spots. Primo.
Thanks, bud.
Primo. All right, guys, it's time for Star Trek.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
All right, guys, our phone number here is 646-668-2433. And if you'd like to join our conversation, please give us a call. We'll get you on the air. We'll be live here for about another hour. So the first story we have, Star Trek Picard showrunner teases season 3 villain, which Enterprise and Worf's Dominion connection. Worf's new sword. That's what I said. That's why do you think I grabbed this story? Worf's new sword. A lot of fans were excited to see Worf's look in season 3. In the teaser, Worf can be seen with a sword on his back. Terry Metalis offered a bit of behind-the-scenes detail. The sword on Worf's back is called a Kurleth, and it was designed by the creator of the Batleth, Dan Curry. And yes, you will see him use it in Star Trek Picard.
Woo!
So we have a Batleth, a Matleth, and a Kurleth. Interesting.
Dang it, now there's three to remember.
There's three different weapons now, so I'm looking forward to that one. The effing Enterprise. TNG was set on the Enterprise D, and the movie's transition to the Enterprise E. Metalis seemed to point in a different direction from those two ships, saying, shutting this down before people get their hopes up. It's not what you think. So what the F are you talking about then? Get it? What the F? Cough, cough. Okay, I'll see myself out. I think he's dropping a hint there.
I think perhaps. So, Jim, and we're going to talk about that in detail a little bit later.
Yeah, I think that's an effing hint. Worf's Dominion connection. In the teaser, Worf clearly has four pips, which would indicate the rank of a Starfleet captain. Metalis tweeted, in rank only and not what you expect. You'll just have to see. I'm just saying that's not where we meet him here. He's on another track, one related to the Dominion War. Now I've said enough. Bye. If you guys remember,
he didn't say I've said enough. He said I've said too much.
Too much.
He revealed too much.
If you remember on Deep Space Nine, Sisko put a permanent mark on his record that would prevent him from ever becoming captain of a starship.
That's right.
So, yeah, he's a captain, but not of a starship. So we'll have to wait and see. And yes, Commander Geordi and Commander Seven, Commodore Geordi and Commander Seven. Metalis tweeted, Seven will be a first officer, but of which ship under which captain? Interesting. Last time we saw her, she was the captain of the Stargazer, promoted by Admiral Picard.
Dude, if she was on a ship where under Admiral Janeway, I would literally lose my shit.
So they're not telling us. So that's interesting. The villain is a new character and a familiar actress. Metalis tweeted, it's not Sela. It's a new character, but there definitely is a nod to Tasha in the new season. Yeah, I never said they were a huge star. I said you've seen them many times before.
Oh,
and they
out.
And them is the biggest hint in the world, I think. Because using those pronouns, they and them, you know, are we talking Captain Angel? I don't know.
We haven't
seen
that character many times before, though. We've seen them once.
Well,
it is
true.
I think they're keeping it neutral, but it is a character that we have seen many times before, which I have to tell you, of all the teasers that have come out over the last many years, this one has me most titillated because...
I know who I want it to be.
I know. Okay. Oh, do we want to talk about that?
Who do you want it to be, Paul?
Do you want to go there, Jim, or you want? Should we hold
off?
Hold off.
Yeah, we'll hold off. We got to talk still. All right, Charles, you're up next.
All right. Is Riker's USS Titan appearing in Star Trek Picard Season 3? Jonathan Frakes, newly promoted Captain T. William Riker, departs to take command of the USS Titan in Star Trek Nemesis, the final TNG movie film saw the long-standing first officer of Jean-Luc Picard, Sir Patrick Stewart, leave the Enterprise to take his own command. Star Trek Lower Decks is the latest format to bring the USS Titan to life. During the season one finale, Luna-class starship warped in to save our hero ship, the USS Cerritos. However, Captain Riker will return with Titan in season two. With the shared episode, Kayshan, his eyes open, saw the focus of the Titan and Riker's crew. Star Trek's biggest leader, Jonathan Frakes, took part in the audio commentary of the episode. This was for Lower Deck Season 2 DVD Blu-ray, which saw him join the showrunner Mike McMahon and Jack Quaid during the commentary for the episodes while speaking out the Titan. Frakes offered this cryptic tease. The Titan is beep. Frank's event continues by saying, "I didn't say that." Additionally, also joked that his leaking stuff out in the past got him in big trouble with the upstairs at Paramount. Mike McMahon built onto Frakes' DVD comment by confirming he revealed something about another Star Trek show on a DVD commentary for another show. Many Trekkies now think Terry had teased that the USS Enterprise will take the stage. However, Sir Patrick Stewart also teased we'll be seeing more than one Enterprise in Star Trek Picard Season 3. But what about this? Is the Stargazer bridge being reused for the Titan? Think about it. William T. Riker is returning. After all, imagine him taking his old ship out for a spin.
Interesting. Very. Very, very interesting. Lots of stuff. Paul, you've got an interesting story for us, too.
I sure do, Jim. This next one is a little peek ahead at the second season of a show that we've all become very fond of in recent days. Star Trek Strange New Worlds cast teases Kirk and Spock bonding and season two on steroids. Anson Mount, Captain Pike, had previously said the second season takes bigger swings and how they are exploring even more genres. When you have a new story every week and a new planet every week, you can also change the mode and the tone. And so we've been really pushing the boundaries with that in the second season and seeing how many different kinds of genres and things we can get away with. And being able to invite many different kinds of directors with many different kinds of styles, it's just been a joy. You're going to see more of the ship. And as the show progresses, we get to build more of the Enterprises. Lower Decks crossover is mostly live action. Voice actors Tawny Newsome, Beckett Mariner, and Jack Quaid, Brad Boimler, appearing as the live action versions of their characters from the animated series. We've been wondering about this. Anson Mount offered some more detail about the crossover. It's predominantly live action for everyone involved, but there are animated elements at different points. I thought it was going to be Roger Rabbit with animated characters following us around, but once they explained it to me, saying, no, I was like, oh, that's actually kind of brilliant the way it's been done. Very intriguing. It's also clear that Lower Decks characters interact with many members of the rest of the Strange New Worlds cast and crew. Celia Rose Gooding, who plays Uhura. Tawny Newsome and Jack Quaid are both incredible comedians, and they gave all of us permission to show up for work in a way that we haven't before. I didn't feel comfortable before riffing and doing my own thing, and they showed up guns blazing, and it was really awesome to work and collaborate with them. So it sounds like that crossover episode is going to have all kinds of humorous moments in there where things are going to feel a little different. So a little bit more experimental, a little bit more off the chain. Seems to be what we're getting a hint of for upcoming season two, and a little glimpse of a Lieutenant Kirk who is more fun. Paul Wesley talked more about how he is playing a different Kirk in season two. As he explained, anything you saw in the season one finale is strangely not applicable because it's an alternate timeline future. So when we meet Kirk again in season two, there's no memory of that. He's meeting Pike for the first time. He's a young lieutenant. He's not a captain. He doesn't have that formidable Shatner-esque quality yet. And I think that he does take some mentorship, and he has a high degree of respect for Pike, for sure. We're going to see pre-Kirk trying to figure out who he is as a lieutenant on the Farragut. Oh, little call back to Obsession there, friends. And he's going to show up in unexpected places at unexpected times. We're also going to see more fun with Kirk and Spock. The season showed Kirk and Spock meeting for the first time in an alternate timeline, but in season two, we're seeing them meet at an earlier point in the canon timeline, as Wesley explained. It's interesting because it's obviously such an iconic relationship, and just playing the anticipation of that without spoiling it, I think you play that out as long as possible because they have to forge that over time. Spock hijinks. We've heard that before. Peck also spoke more about how Spock explores his human side. Spock gets to really start to explore his human side, and it leads to a lot of funny hijinks. So I'm really excited about bringing that comedic element to Spock. You'll see Spock explore his human side more in a way that will ultimately affect his more immediate relationships in a fun and interesting way. We'll see that carry on, and it's definitely a part of his evolution to becoming who he is. He needs to know himself more deeply as a human in order to become the Spock that Leonard Nimoy portrays in the original series. Very interesting. Now, there was no clarity on when we can expect the new season, which has already been shot. Paramount Plus has only said it will be next year. Season one of Strange New Worlds is currently available to stream exclusively on Paramount Plus in the United States, the UK, Latin America, Australia, South Korea, and the Nordics, and airs on Bell Media's CTV Sci-Fi channel and streams on Crave in Canada. It will also stream exclusively on Paramount Plus in Italy, France, Germany, Switzerland, and Austria later this year. So fans of our podcast and our Facebook page, if you're in a country that has not yet had Paramount Plus unveil Strange New Worlds to you yet, hold on tight. The wait is going to be worth it. I think you will feel it's been very, very well justified. And my friend Eric, what do you got going on here? I think you got something on your front burner, friend. What else you got in the Strange New Worlds universe?
Oh, my gosh. We've got so much good stuff, Paul. A Strange New Worlds Season 2 should break a Star Trek alien tradition, which I'm pretty excited about. The Gorn were, of course, reintroduced in Strange New Worlds and made an immediate impact as grave threats to the United Federation of Planets. Cleverly, Lieutenant La'an Noonien Singh's one of the rare humans who have survived being captured by the Gorn as a child. La'an's personal history and expertise with the Gorn became invaluable when Captain Christopher Pike's starship Enterprise battled the Gorn in episode 4, Memento Mori, which we will talk about tonight. The Gorn debuted in the Star Trek The Original Series episode Arena, of course, and were established as a savage humanoid reptile who were nonetheless capable of speech and cunning tactics. Captain James T. Kirk, of course, at the time, played by William Shatner, faced and defeated the Gorn on Cestus III, and it was their sole canonical appearance until Star Trek Enterprise Season 4, which showed a Gorn that was reimagined with CGI, which Jim hates and I love. Star Trek Lower Decks showed a Gorn wedding, but Star Trek Strange New Worlds further reimagined the Gorn and turned the reptiles into a terrifying and cannibalistic adversary. Strange New Worlds has a perfect opportunity to address the various discrepancies with the Gorn by showing that they are not a monoculture. Strange New Worlds already made massive changes to the Gorn by showing how they can be born with other humanoids and fight for dominance after birth until there is one alpha. The Gorn were also established to have feeding planets where they consume aliens they abduct, yet the Gorn also have the technological acumen to build starships, and the reptiles are a spacefaring race. The best way to reconcile all of this is to show that there are different types of Gorn with various skill sets and capabilities. And The reason
where
I love this article
for
and we so that is one of the reasons that I love this article so much is that we literally about a month ago had a show called The Gorn Return. You can go on our website at Blog Talk and go back and check out our Gorn show. And we talked about all of the various ways that the Gorn's ways and methods, I guess, could be reconciled given today's canon. And I will tell you, I can't wait to talk about the Gorn tonight relative to Strange New Worlds. But what we talked about during that show was pretty interesting. And so if I were you, I would absolutely go back about a month and look at our show called The Gorn Back. It's Gorn-tastic. And we also, at the time, had our good friend Andy Bray on the show to talk about the Gorn. So that was a ton of fun.
And Chekhov joined us, too.
As well, Chekhov always comes when Andy shows. I don't know how Andy does it, but when he shows up, somehow Chekhov always comes.
Weird.
It's weird. It's
so
weird, man.
The final story, if you guys have noticed, we're talking about Strange New World. I wonder why. So the last story I have for you guys is Strange New World is the most watched Paramount Plus Star Trek or original debut. CEO says franchise is just getting started. Paramount Plus set out an announcement revealing that Star Trek Strange New World had the strongest debut ever for a Star Trek series, setting a new record at the most watched original series in the franchise's over first 90 days. The series is also off to a strong start internationally, ranking as one of the top two most watched original series on Paramount Plus in the UK. The company announced Paramount Plus had grown to 43 million subscribers globally, with the most signups for any U.S. subscription service during the second quarter of 2022. In a call with investors last week, Paramount Global CEO Bob Bakish cited Trek among the diverse drivers for Paramount Plus. President and CEO of CBS, George Cheeks, offered more praise along with a hint of more to come for the franchise, saying, quote, over the past 6 years, Alex Kurtzman and his amazing team have brilliantly created and carefully curated a new Star Trek universe for Paramount Plus with five complementary series, each different in tone, style, story, and in some cases, targeting audiences. Each series is a success in its own right, and now the franchise's newest edition, Strange New World, is earning critical acclaim, delivering notable performances and achievements on the service, both domestically and internationally. We look forward to the franchise's continuing journey on Paramount Plus here in the U.S. and globally, where in the case of Strange New Worlds, we're just getting started. So that's interesting because you very rarely hear Paramount Plus give any numbers on any of their shows, but the fact that they have 43 million new subscribers, that's a big...
Yeah. It's a lot.
That's big. That's huge.
So. Yeah, it's funny because actually if you look at the numbers overall in the U.S. right now, Paramount Plus and Disney are the only two services that are actually adding subscribers and all of the other ones are losing them.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, with them giving us new Star Trek every Thursday, what better reason do you need?
Yeah. I mean, it's super competitive out there right now. I mean, you know, was there any bigger hit this summer and late spring than Stranger Things? No, Stranger Things was huge, right? It was a phenomenon. Yet Netflix, where they hosted Stranger Things, is bleeding like a dying pig. I mean, they have like just to have the biggest hit there is streaming. And lose like a third of your subscribers is a frightening indication of the state of the business right now. It's like super. So for these guys to be continuing to rack up, you know, and do this kind of numbers like you're talking about here, it's just a sign that, you know, you can, I think, kind of ignore a lot of the naysayers and cranky people who bray about, you know, woke track or whatever they want to call it, because clearly there's legions and legions of fans globally who are flocking to this and want this content.
Well, that's the thing. People talk about the ratings are low, and it's like new
shows
don't
go by
ratings. It's subscribers. And if these people are complaining about it, they're watching it. So, well, guys, we're going to talk about Strange New Worlds Season 1. We'll touch on the highs. We'll touch on the lows. And every week I ask you guys on our Facebook page to rate each episode on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the best. I averaged out all the scores that you guys gave us, and Strange New Worlds Season 1 got an overall fan score of what, Eric? What was our total?
It was pretty good, Jim. Like, when it comes to shows, a 9.0 is what our fans gave this show. So that was pretty impressive. Like, that is by far over and above any movie ratings, any show ratings, anything else. It just feels like Strange New Worlds is really the kind of Trek that people want to watch right now.
So basically, the premiere episode, the pilot, Strange New Worlds, scored a 9.8 by you guys. Episode 3, Ghost of Illyria, scored a 9. Episode 4, Memento Mori, scored a 9.1. Episode 5, Spock Amok, scored a 9.4. And episode 10, A Quality of Mercy, scored a 9.7. So there you have it, you know. Half the episodes scored a 9 or higher. Why you guys?
Yeah, I mean, Jim, according to the fans, the lowest score was the Serene Squall, which was the pirate episode, and that was only an 8.3, so it wasn't like that low.
Exactly. And we only get 10 episodes. That's a bummer. But
yeah,
with Star Trek every Thursday, you know, I can deal with
that.
But
wouldn't you rather have fewer episodes and have higher quality?
Well,
right?
In
the day where there's like Next Gen, right? Okay, what are you averaging? Like about 22 episodes a season? But how many of them are classic level and really, really good? Maybe a third of them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, ever since the onset of, you know, modern TV and the ascendance of cable, like call it the post-Sopranos era, right? I mean, most network show or no shows now that are being, you know, successfully driven only have about 10, 12 per season, maybe 13 tops. Because I think they realize if they're producing too much, you're in the sausage factory zone then, and it's odds are you just don't have the time to sustain the quality either on the set or in the writer's room. When you're cranking out that many hours of TV per season, it's just not sustainable. Better to just do like 9 or 10 and have them be golden.
Really
and
good.
Then the writers can really focus. And then you're keeping the fans super hungry for what's coming.
Well, I think one of the differences we have now is instead of cranking out an episode for each week, we produce 10 episodes, and then we start releasing them one at a time so that everything's got that organization and they don't have that rushed look to them like the original series, the other previous series always had.
Yeah, Charles.
I hear talk about on the Voyager podcast, where they'll sit there and say, "Oh yeah, we got into post production a month later." It's like they had problems remembering what was happening in that episode. It's like, yeah, that was 3 episodes ago. I don't remember that script anymore. We've already passed that script. Whereas you do everything all at once, you can do a lot more quality work.
Yeah, and Charles, I kind of feel like maybe one of these days, you guys, we should do a show on that exact phenomenon, because I feel like the world of Twitter and the 140 character world that we live in actually contributes to that and, you know, makes the 10 episode season normalized, because each one hits harder but is, you know, smaller and doesn't take up as much time. I'm curious, and I think it warrants more kind of talking about, just as it relates to the amount of time that we have to watch TV and the amount of time that we have to watch Star Trek, and, you know, why 10 episodes has become the new norm versus 26 episodes. You know, show loyalty. Man, this is just a topic that I think can be burrowed down into very deeply if we want to.
Absolutely. I think that Strange New Worlds combined, you know, TNG was very episodic to, I think, flawless. And TOS was very episodic. But I think that Deep Space Nine was a really good stepping stone between, you know, the serialized stuff we see on Discovery and Picard and what we see on TNG, where it was episodic, yet I would describe it as serialized episodic for Deep Space.
Yeah,
Nine.
And
I
Jim,
think they were the,
Jim,
you know,
Jim, one of the things I want to talk about tonight with our last half an hour is how that relates to our main topic tonight, right? Because I feel like Strange New Worlds takes this this fresh perspective in that it is supposed to generally be serialized television, but come on. It's really, like, if you dig down into it, there is character development that goes from one episode to the next. There are things, there are consequences from one episode to the next that affect what's going on with the character. So it's kind of a, it's like, to me, a little bit of a fakey. It's like, hey, we're going to do episodic television. Surprise, we're actually doing serial television. But
yeah, it's a hybrid.
Episodic. Yeah.
Yeah,
right?
it's a hybrid. You know, there's standalone episodes, but there's a lot of good connective tissue that goes from episode to episode. So it's always driven there. They keep character and theme running through there. You know, they're giving the writers a lot of control.
Fans cry that they want what they want, but I don't think fans really know what they want. But personally, I would have been very disappointed, and I probably wouldn't have liked it as much if it was strictly episodic. Because, like,
well,
you know, one episode, Kirk falls in love with this Indian, and, you know, and then she dies. And the next episode, he's off with
but
Tribbles.
Jim,
and nothing
but, Jim,
happens.
You just as much as me or as much as many guys on this podcast love Discovery, which is a straight-up, like, serial show, right? You have to watch the previous episode to know what's going on in the next episode. So that's not to say that that is a bad way to watch Star Trek. I don't think that's what the podcast is saying at all. It's just saying that Strange New Worlds was the first time in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years that we've been given the opportunity to have episodic Star Trek occurring. And the thing that I think is most important about that is that it's not happening in exactly a, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation via Star Trek The Original Series kind of way. Like, to me, Strange New Worlds approaches it in a different way whereby, yeah, consequences actually matter between episodes, and yet each adventure is its own thing. So it's a hybrid. Like Paul was saying.
Yeah. How did season one end? The very last scene.
Totally.
Yep. That, I mean, there, that ties it up right there. Events from, you know, I want to say episode, what is Ghosts of Valyria? Episode 4, episode 3, yeah, where we first, you know, started to dive into Una's past, right? And then that resurfaced a couple times and then really became like the tag at the end of the episode to like carry us out, right? And I sure know how I want to see that dealt with, but we'll have to wait and see. I definitely have my wish list of how that's going to get dealt with for sure.
Well, I for me personally, I want to see Cybok come back.
Of
I'm stoked for Cybok.
I mean, come on, it's going to happen, right? It's unquestioned that will happen in season two.
He is the gun on Chekhov's mantle, dude. I mean, the fact
totally.
You've seen the back of his head, they are not going to not pull that trigger. That would be crazy. The seed is in the ground, dude. You're just waiting for it to germinate. But it's already been planted and watered. So I guarantee that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be Lawrence Lukinville, it's going to be really interesting because they've set up a lot of interesting stuff about how, you know, Vulcans have had different, you know, depths and different aspects of their society that we haven't really seen before as much, right? Thanks to them deepening the character of T'Pring so much. I mean, that really is fascinating. So it's just like people who may have in the past rolled their eyes at Star Trek V, right? I think they're going to give us a way more compelling and interesting view of Cybok that we've never seen before. I think it's going to be super interesting, given everything that they've got buttressing in place already. I'm super excited to see that. So I really want your wish list to come true. I think if done right, that could be fascinating.
You know, I find myself wanting to see T'Pring and Spock work this all out.
Me too, Jim. I feel like there should be a whole show about, like, how Strange New Worlds is about all of the things we already know are going to happen, and yet we're fascinated with them, right?
I know. They have such lovely chemistry. You want to see
their chemistry.
You want to see it together.
It's great.
Yeah, and we know what's going to happen, but we want to see the details. We want to see the details.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, Spock and Mock was one of my favorite episodes of this season.
So good.
I mean, that's
so
such
good.
It's charming and disarming and completely it should collapse and not work in 100 different ways, but man, they acted the hell out of that together.
Yeah,
they just did such great charisma. You want them to stick it out. You want them to find a way, and it's crazy. It's like a weird torture. And will they torture us? Are we slaves to canon and their love is doomed, or what? I don't know. It is fascinating to see them do this, though. It really is a way to keep the audience, especially, you know, longtime fans, super engaged, because we want to know, and we're super curious.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're talking about keeping fans engaged, what do you think about Nurse Chapel? I think
she's
phenomenal.
So good.
Oh.
Well, and the thing about her is that she is feisty, and she has just enough, like, the brilliance about Nurse Chapel on the show is that she is not a romantic interest of Spock, and yet she's like romantic interest adjacent, which I think as viewers keeps us interested in her, because we already know that it's not going to work out between the two of them. And yet the way that she plays the character is so compelling that I still want to see what she's going to do each week, and the ways in which the friendship between her and Spock is actually going to develop. So to me, she's one of the most exciting characters, because I love that season one kind of dealt with all the like baggage about Nurse Chapel having a crush on Spock, you know, which we kind of see in TOS, and they kind of gave us a little bit more information about, okay, now we're past that. How can these two characters really interact with each other in a friendship kind of way that can benefit the Starship Enterprise? I'm so excited about that.
And we are going to see Corby in season two, they said.
We are. Is that confirmed? Do we know that?
So
yes,
they are going to see, yeah, where they're going to deal with that Corby thing.
I was just going to ask that, because I think that would be fascinating, right? Because that's a big part of her past. That's a great that's great news. I did not know that.
We will see that. And, you know, while we're talking about characters, we have to talk about Uhura.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Seela is doing an outstanding job with filling in the backstory of Uhura. And she's a very well fleshed out, highly intelligent. I'm not to knock, Uhura on TOS, but she's very, very well written in Strange New Worlds.
Well, Jim, what they allow her to do is they take her to the next level, right? TOS allowed Nichelle Nichols to develop the character to a certain level, and we have certain magical episodes that really tell us what Uhura is all about. But I have to tell you that Strange New Worlds takes it to the next level, because it's no longer novel to have a black woman as a important contributor to the main bridge activities of the Starship Enterprise, right? We are now in the 21st century. This is no longer novel. So the question is, how can this woman actually push that Uhura character forward in a world where presumably we no longer care about this kind of stuff? I mean, we could have a long debate about that, but like generally speaking, it's clear that this woman has a different task than Nichelle Nichols had for pushing this character forward. And I just think she's doing a great job. The thing that I really love about her is that her tone and the way that she speaks, actually, to me, completely mirrors the way that Nichelle Nichols would do it. And when I hear her speak, I hear Nichelle Nichols. And so the, like, transfer of character is very easy for me, way more easy for me than it is for example, Captain Kirk.
She has a very lyrical delivery. It's very, very melodious.
Yeah, yeah. And her voice is just beautiful to listen to. The tone of it and the raspiness of it is really just nice. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about one of the things that makes her character so interesting was her fooling around, her diving into engineering and working with Hemmer. So what do you say about Hemmer and the demise of his character, unfortunately? He was my favorite, and that's the downfall, guys. When I like a character, that's it. They're done. I thought Kalar was great. They killed her. I liked Tasha Yar. They killed her. I liked Hemmer. They killed him. Kiss of death.
Well, I think you got to see a better part of a cadet.
Yeah.
A cadet's not coming in to look at one field. A cadet, unless they're assigned to a specific area, come in and cross train. Start learning about the different departments to see where you want to be. I know they've taken time studying their specific area, but it still gives them the chance to look around and see if they want to start spending time in another department. And you don't see that as often, but we did see that in Lower Decks. When Rutherford was visiting different departments, where'd he want to be? And finally realized engineering's where he wanted to be. But he needed to spend some time to see where he belonged. And I think it was good to see her, where do I belong? Do I belong in engineering? Do I belong in security? Do I belong in communication? Because remember, she didn't spend time with just engineering.
Nope.
She was working with security, and remember the fact is she learned all those rules that she had to know. And Laon was making sure she knew. It's like, okay, you shouldn't have been touching that with your hand. You got to be touching it, checking it with your scanner first. So we got to see her cross-train across multiple areas.
Here's what I'll say, Charles, though. In episode 9, which was All Those Who Wander, she does, for the first time, use the term Team Hemmera when it comes to her and Hemmer and Uhura working together. It's Team Hemmera, which I just thought was so funny, right? Because it was the second episode that we had during the season where the two of them had time together. Hemmer got to bestow some, like, knowledge on her for what was going on. And in both scenarios, they were in peril, right? Like, things were going bad in both, like, both at times. So I love that she was like, Team Hemmera, da-da-da. I can't remember what she said, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, before we run out of time, we also want to talk about the doc on the Enterprise, Dr. Mbenga. What do you guys think about him? He was briefly seen on TOS, but we don't know really much about him until Strange New Worlds. He's another legacy character.
Yeah, Jim. I mean, to me, Dr. Mbenga is the most awesome character that they have actually brought forth in Strange New Worlds. To me, he was a guy that we see very, very briefly, like you just said. And the depth that they brought to him with his whole, like, story of his daughter and the way that they resolved that over the season. I mean, we've talked about it in previous podcasts. It was really, really special. And his, what will I say? The way that he interacts with other characters, I think, is really important. Like, I think his relationship with Chapel is very special. I think that his relationship with Spock is very special. I even think that his relationship with Pike is kind of special in a sort of different way. But certainly Mbenga and Chapel are a dynamic duo that I cannot get enough of in this series.
Eric, you forgot one relationship. You forgot one relationship. and Vega and Una.
Oh, good call. Yeah.
Those two have got interesting interactions with those two.
Totally.
So let's talk about Una. What do you guys think about Una? I think that she's a Una was never really fleshed out in TOS at all.
She was only in the cage. Well, she was only in the cage, right?
Yeah, she was only in the cage, and that was it, and she was gone.
Well, you know the origin of the character, right?
Tell us, Paul.
Well, yeah, she. Yeah.
Everything I've read is basically that, you know, they wanted her to be sort of like the cold, glacial, logical person, right?
Yeah.
And then everybody involved in, you know, the behind-the-scenes, you know, executive level was, we cannot have a female character that has that big of a part. There's just no way. And they've said, sorry, you're out, and we're going to make the logical one be the Vulcan. And so they took all of those sort of colder, logical things, and they pushed that over onto Spock and made that more part of his character. And they said, well, we got a sideline. We can't have – it was still a very misogynistic land. It was super early 60s. That's what I've heard.
Yep.
Actually, I've heard a slightly different story. It was that they wanted to get rid of Number One and Spock. They pushed to keep Spock, but part of the reason they did not want Una in there was not only the fact she was female, because she was Major Roddenberry, she was Major Barrett, which was too close to Gene. Their relationship, they were too close, and they did not want her having a major part in the series at that time. And that's the reason she was then was not added to the new series, because she was too close to Gene.
That's so interesting, Charles. And, you know, the nice thing that Strange New World does is, of course, it adds to the canon of her with Episode 3. In particular, Ghost of Illyrian, we learn a little bit more about what Illyrians are actually about, because in case you haven't been following, you know, what happens on the internet or beta canon or that kind of stuff, you may not know that much about Illyrian. What's that?
Or the books.
Or the books, yeah.
She showed up in
a
book.
Yeah, no, good call, Charles. Illyrians have been kind of described a lot in beta canon, but there's not a lot of stuff in the original series or any of the, you know, more recent iterations that actually describes this. So to me, to have her canon kind of described a little bit more in the series is really cool, although I will say that Ghost of Illyria, to me, is actually one of the weaker episodes. It's in when I look at my overall scores, it's my third weakest episode of Strange New Worlds.
So let's talk a little bit about the new characters. Let's start off with Ortegas. What do you think about Ortegas? I personally like her. I like her.
She's the best.
You know, especially in the final episode. You know, the quality of Mercy. I thought she kind of took over the mantle of what's his face from that episode, Styles.
Yeah.
The eye
from Balintair.
And we need to hunt them down.
Literally the best. And, you know, one thing I was noticing as I was rewatching the season was we all thought that he called her Erica throughout the entire season. But in fact, throughout the first half or so of the season, he actually called her Ms. Ortegas, and then only till later started referring to her as Erica. And honestly, guys, this is the character I am the most interested in for season two, because if you rewatch season one, there are at least 2 to 3 pretty solid references to her and some kind of Vulcan connection. Like she definitely knows what Illyrpa is. I'm pretty sure she's fought with Illyrpa before, and I'm pretty sure she's gotten injured by fighting with Illyrpa before, which means to me there's some kind of relationship connection that we get to see about Ortegas in season 2, which I'm super excited about.
Yeah, I like her. I like her a lot. I think she's a great
Terrific actor.
Yep. And she's not afraid to tell people off on social media either, which I really respect her.
It's so cool.
Yeah, that just makes me like her more because it's like she does not suffer trolls. She shuts them down, which is great.
She shuts them right down.
So I want to throw a question out to Eric because Eric kind of is monitoring his scores. Eric, what was your final score for the season?
For my entire for the entire season, it was 8.25.
Interesting. I was a little close to the fans. I had an 8.9.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see where Jim wants to go here, but I feel like we can talk about individual episodes if we have time.
Well, the last character I wanted to talk about was the last new character, and that's La'an. And what do you guys think about La'an, Noonien, and Singh?
A lot of mystery.
Very mysterious.
So mysterious, but yet in some ways a little bit transparent. Like, so there's the whole Gorn connection thing, and yet we have no idea anything about her connection to Khan, right? Like the last name was not addressed at all in season one, except for the fact that when she was a kid, she was teased for being, you know, the descendant of an augment. And they do deal with that just a little bit, but we don't really know what repercussions that origin has. But we do know that La'an ends up somewhere a little bit different at the end of the season, right, Jim?
Yeah, she takes off Ripley style with Newt. You know?
Yeah.
Go fuck,
so
know?
True.
Yeah.
Good comparison.
It's a very,
let's hope she doesn't end up in Alien 3.
My God, with a cat,
She took to find Newt's family. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, though. She's a terrific actor. I mean, she's really outstanding. I mean, she just sells it. I mean, it's just, I like having, you know, you've got all these different characters with different facets. But what I like about her is she's just, you know, she's been through bad trauma, right? Yeah. And she's not shy about letting that out. She doesn't hide it, right? She goes, I've been through hell. And she's reminding people of it all the time. And it's a ferocity that helps make her an effective security officer because she understands what the threats are. And she wants to make sure that those threats don't come back. So she's a force.
And Paul, this is a mental health thing that I think that Strange New Worlds is doing a little bit better than Picard did, because to me, La'an is a person who now recognizes the fact that she needs a little bit of help to deal with her PTSD from the Gorn, you know, situation. And to me, they're just dealing with that in a much more responsible way in this
show. Couldn't agree more.
Agree
more. Much more enlightened and much more progressive and much more in tune with like trauma and, you know, things like that. So I think, but I'm, you know, whatever they give her, she's going to run with it. I mean, that's the thing is just like, you know, as we go through here briefly and talk about all these different characters, right? There's no weak links. None of these actors are ones who are like, oh yeah, they're okay. I mean, everybody's awesome. Right. I mean, every single character, every actor brings something that gets us excited about stuff. That's so unusual. They really cast this thing well.
And one of the things I hear is people talk about plot armor, and that's why Strange New Worlds isn't as believable. But let's take a look at that for a second. Pike, he doesn't need any plot armor. We already know where he's heading. And that's the fact. They dealt with it and he accepted it. He's going to be in a wheelchair flashing lights, and he's going to end up on Talos IV with Vina. So that's his fate, and that's not going to change. So there's his plot armor. Spock, well, we already know where Spock is going to eventually end up. So he has plot armor. Chapel, we also know she's got plot armor because she ends up in Star Trek IV. So she's not really going anywhere anytime too soon, right? And Dr. Mbenga, he's kind of in the gray zone. We see him in two episodes. But McCoy is the chief medical officer, so something can happen down the road with Mbenga. He doesn't have the plot armor that a lot of the others have. Hemmer, well, he lost all of his armor. Uhura, she's got plot armor because, again, we know where she ends up. But Ortegas does not have any plot armor, and neither does Soon, and neither does Una. Because they all, Una disappears. We never see her again. So it's not like every character on the show is protected and not in danger.
Right, Jim, but it's a fair question, I think, anytime. And I think the same question came up when Discovery came out, right? Because we all said, oh, it's a prequel. We already know what eventually happens. Why would we want to watch this show? You know, these people have plot armor, these people don't. But I don't know. I feel like this is a new phenomenon that is happening here. It's happening in the Star Wars universe with Boba Fett. You know, you already kind of know where these characters are headed. So the question is, are you interested in the way in which they get there? And if you are, then I think it's a successful show. It's a successful, you know, writing campaign to tell the story, because just because we know that Odysseus, you know, makes it back at the end doesn't mean we don't want to hear the story of how he does it, right?
Well, we just talked about Spock and T'Pring, and even though we know where it's heading, we still care. Those two characters
right.
have a chemistry that we want to see.
Yeah, I actually think this show, I mean, Strange New Worlds, more than any other Star Trek show, relies on this, because we all know where Pike is headed. And if you're paying attention, you know that eventually he gets the girl, so to speak, in the cage, right? like Pike eventually is going to end up in an okay place, but we are dealing with this like overshadowing doom that he lives with, because we care about him as a character, and because Anson Mount does a kick-ass job of actually portraying this character, and you know he's been doing it over a couple of different series. So I just think that there's a whole like synergy between the character, the way it's written, the actor, the way that like the plot armor applies or does not apply, the history of the character. There's a lot of layers here.
Well, I also think that the fact that on Discovery Season 2, if memory serves, Vina reached out to Pike way across, I forgot where they were, somewhere in the universe. She reached out to him and found him. And so there's a connection there that we know exists. So we know where Pike is going to eventually end up. He's going to get the happy ending. He's going to get the girl.
Yeah.
We know where he's going to be.
And what's cool, Jim, is that if you know the series, then you know that and you're still interested in what happens. And if you don't know the series, then you're along for the ride anyway, right? So it's
exactly.
like a win-win, right?
I think it's great. It's a great approach, I think. And it's one. I think that's where Enterprise made their mistake, actually, is they could have done things differently. Even though we knew where the show was heading, they didn't take it there. So let's take a look before we run out of time, which we almost pretty much are.
You missed one character with plot armor. James T. Kirk.
Okay.
We know James T. Kirk has plot armor, but we don't know his backstory prior to coming on the Enterprise.
That's true. We'll find that out in Season 2. So our fans gave Strange New Worlds an overall rating of 9.0. And I read down to you guys the five episodes that scored over a 9 by our fans. So, you know, just quickly, Paul, what was your, of the 10 episodes that we saw in Season 1, what was your favorite?
Number one for me was Episode 1. Strange New Worlds. That one to me is one of the most perfect debut episodes of any Star Trek series ever. It just like it had all the Star Trek stuff. It had all the character stuff. It had all the feels. It had everything. 10 out of 10 for me. And a very close second was the last episode, which I gave a 9.95. So. Personal scores. What do you guys got?
So, Charles, or Eric, I mean, so that was your favorite episode. Which one did you think was the weakest?
My personal weakest episode? Well, so I had two episodes that I personally felt were the weakest, and they both have a similar theme. Number one was episode 4, which was Memento Mori, which was the very first episode where the Gorn were kind of introduced. And we do get the reveal of the Doctor's transporter kid a little bit there, but I don't know. We could go into depth, but go back and listen to the show where we talked about that one. I thought that one was kind of weak. And then I also didn't love the second Gorn episode, which was episode 9, All Those Who Wander. I gave that one a 6, and the only reason that I gave that one a 6 was because I think there are a lot of totally awesome character moments there, but I hated all the horror stuff. I do not watch Star Trek to watch aliens, you guys. Like, I love aliens. I'm not going to lie. I freaking love aliens. I do not watch Star Trek to watch aliens, so... just a little bit of a different thing there for me. So my two lowest episodes were episode 6 and episode 9, which I both gave a 6 or lower.
And how about you? What do you think, Paul? You're the best one and the worst one.
I echo a lot of what Eric said. Is that the pilot and the season finale were both just so just rivet tight. They were so great. It's one of the best pilots I've seen. Especially given how much anticipation there was for it, right? And how much everyone just, you know, is quick to turn on something these days. And that pilot was so satisfying. And then there were a couple episodes in the back half of this season I wasn't super high on myself. But boy, did they redeem it with that finale. It was just amazing. It was really poetic and just beautifully written. Personal favorite, though, I got to say, I really think it might be Spock Amok. Just because it surprised me so much. I did not think that a zany hijinks comedy of errors thing could work at all. I was like, uh-oh. But they did such a great job, especially with those opening scenes on Vulcan. What a terrific episode and so entertaining. Yeah, you know, there were a few of them after Spock Amok where I don't want to go into details about, you know, I felt the first half of the season was a little stronger than the second half for me. Like Eric, I thought it was not very creative to have chest bursting Gorns. It was just too derivative of Alien. I could have done without that because I like originality. But overall, the carps are minor. This is a sensational first season of television. Anybody who loves Star Trek is going to just drink this up with a spoon. I think we're all sitting here just super excited to see what they're able to do with season 2. I loved it. I thought it was delightful. And I know how I want to see season 2 start. I know what I want.
I know what I want. How about you, Charles?
Well, I looked at it. My highest score actually was the season finale. The next one down was Spock Amok, and third came the season opener. So I think those really were strong episodes.
Yeah.
I think Jim and I will agree upon probably our weakest link, and that was Elisa Kingdom. Not my favorite episode. Really, to pick up one episode was hard to do because those top 3 were all great episodes. And a lot of insight and a lot of detail we got in those episodes. And I think that's why they were all 9.5 and higher, because they were just great episodes and great details. As Eric talks about wanting to learn a little bit about their past, I'm the one on the group, especially that's big on backstories. I love novels because I love to hear what happened before. And this is definitely a great series by giving good backstories and backstories that aren't affecting canon. Where we definitely are having a good job of really getting an idea what these characters are without affecting their future backgrounds. So I can't wait to see what we do with season two.
And I think I agree with Charles completely. I think the quality of Mercy blew me away when I first saw it. And I watched that episode probably a half a dozen times. It's just so well written and well acted. The premise, it's not really a time travel story per se, but yet it is. Pike just crushes the old monster maroon uniform. And the fact that they use the Klingon time crystals, I love that episode. But it's as good as it is. I think that, Paul said it. There are so many that it's hard to pick the one I like the most. I agree with Charles. The one that I could do without is the Elysian Kingdom. But all the other ones are just outstanding. I mean, the Serene Squall, when we saw Cybok at the end, oh my God, you probably heard me screaming in Portland. I mean, I was just like, I wanted to pick up the phone and call Eric. Eric, it's Cybok. He's back. I mean, I just went crazy over that. I really did because I love Star Trek V and the Cybok thing got me. The Spock Amok was phenomenal. Lift Us Up Where Suffering Cannot Reach, where they killed.
Oh, so good.
Oh, my
so
God.
Good.
I mean,
that's a nine.
I can't. This season was just so strong and so good. It's hard for me to just to pick one over the other, but I would have to go with the finale, Quality of Mercy, I think, for me. And overall, I'm right there with the fans. I would give this season a nine easily. There's really no weak links for me. Elysian Kingdom is the weakest link for me, but that's not even like Paul. It's just a little nitpick, really.
I just want to mention, Jim, that I think that's so interesting that episode 8, is very polarizing, I think. I gave that episode a 9, and you guys probably gave it a 6 or so. And I think it's just, and I think it's just based on, how you see television and whether or not you're interested in kind of metaphorical references, and it's not yes or no or good or bad or whatever. I think it's so, to me, that's just so interesting that became one of the most polarizing episodes. Whereas, I would say Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. I could see where people might get turned off by that episode because it's kind of intense, man. But to me, that is what makes it probably one of the best episodes this season, too.
Yeah, I there's just so much. There's so much good here. There's so much going on. And like Paul said, every episode builds on the one before it. Little bits of the characters, Sam Kirk shows up.
So Jim, ask a question? So you guys, so we have talked about episodic versus serial. So would you be as interested in this show watching it out of order? Let's say it was the old days of reruns and you're seeing episode 5, then you're seeing episode 8, then you're seeing episode 3. I have to tell you that I actually on the third run through, I actually did watch these out of order and I did not enjoy them as much. So while I think that they are promoting that this is episodic television, I actually think it's serial television personally. I want to know what you guys think.
I think it is because
it's absolutely serialized.
I don't think you'd care about Hammer.
Yeah.
If you knew he was going to die.
Right.
Yeah,
I think it's really a hybrid. It's really a hybrid.
Yeah.
They take an element of both models.
And
the nice thing is with streaming, you can watch them in any order.
Yeah,
but it's more of a pain in the ass to watch them out of order, right? So I honestly think the writers are banking on the fact that it is way easier for you to watch 1 to 2 and then 2 to 3 than it is for you watching them out of order, which maybe actually has been true for TNG and all the other shows for a while. I don't know. I'm just always interested in the world in which we live, where you can watch shows how you want to watch them, and yet you're going to watch them in the order in which the machine tells you to watch them anyway, which is the way in which they were produced, right?
In the world of streaming, mm-hmm. if you watch Lower Decks season 2, episode 1, it's going to go to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next.
Right.
And if you turn off the TV and go and get your pizza bites and you come back, it's going to be
right.
Off.
Yeah.
Whereas, say, TNG, for instance, when I go to watch TNG, I don't start with Encounter at Farpoint and watch all 700 episodes. Generally, I'll watch Reunion. I'll watch Redemption. I'll watch mm-hmm. Festival. I'll go to a particular episode and not care about the rest of them because I'm just watching that one. Whereas you can't really do that with the new Star Trek, but there's only 10 episodes.
Well, that's what I'm saying is like they've claimed that it's episodic. In 20 years, will people go back and watch episode 8 of Strange New Worlds? I'm not sure that's true.
No, it's a lie. It's not. It's because of the way they write it. It isn't. Because if you watched episode 10, all of a sudden they're arresting Una. But if you never saw the Ghost of Illyria, you wouldn't know why she was being arrested, what she did wrong, or any of that. If you didn't watch that episode first, it wouldn't make any sense to you.
Okay, so what you're saying, Jim, is that our good friends like Nate, who, you know, will maybe not like the way that Star Trek is produced in a serial way these days. Like, this is just the way that Star Trek is. And, you know, even though this is their best attempt at episodic, it really is serialized because ultimately viewers are interested in things like character development, you know, people changing over time, that sort of stuff. And that stuff is what needs to happen for it to become a serialized type show. I don't
Absolutely.
Know. I guess the reason I'm bringing this up is that I think it's kind of funny to me that like everybody complained about shows like Discovery and said, oh, I really don't like how it's serialized and I have to watch the thing before. And like they bitched about it for years, you guys. And now we're getting something that is different, and yet it's essentially the same, and people love it. So I'm just like, to me, that is a very interesting phenomenon.
Well, guys, we are out of time, unfortunately. I knew this Strange New Worlds was going to do it for us, but we are out of time. So I want to take an opportunity to say thank you to my Trekspurts for hanging out and sharing this wonderful Thursday night with me. So we'll start off with our very own Paul, the toy guy. Thank you for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight, Paul.
My pleasure, Uncle Jim. This is a great talk. I was wondering, how are we going to do the whole thing on Strange New Worlds? Because we've talked about it so much this last few weeks. But, wow, we found a lot of a little distance in perspective really made this an interesting conversation. So well considered and really fun. Fun show tonight. Thanks, friends.
And, of course, thank you to our very own Eric for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you, Eric.
Always a good time. Thank you guys so much. Love you guys.
And thank you, of course, to Charles for hanging out with us and sharing your opinions. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, thank you. I always enjoy the conversations about Trek, no matter what direction we go.
And I hope that David, who's listening at home, is enjoying his donuts and feeling much better tonight. And I want to let you guys know that on Monday, we're going to be talking about one of my favorites, Klingons. And next Thursday, we're going to be talking about Star Trek Lower Decks, getting prepared for the new season. So check that out, if you will. And I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying, please, guys, be good to each other and stay safe. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Night, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Take care, friends.
Let's see what's out there.